And we're going to take your phone calls with Brad Steiger, author of Real Vampires, sort of like Open Lines, because I'd like you to share your stories with us, too, in case you've ever come across a real vampire, a night stalker, or a creature from the dark side. And welcome back. We've got Brad Steiger. We've got your phone calls as well. Brad, have you ever run across anybody like this in real for yourself? Real vampires?
Well, the vampire community, certainly.
Yeah. But I mean, not when you're out or anything like that. You see someone and go, I know that person's a vampire.
Well, I've been in that kind of situation. Whether they were or not, I don't know. And a lot of people make extravagant claims. I would like to think that those people were just in the spirit of Halloween all year long, as we mentioned. And the study that I've done, and because I've been really interested, well, as you know, I've been writing first published materials go back to 1956. But I mean, this particular aspect of real, you know, we've talked werewolves with the werewolf.
And we've done that before.
Right. And I said there, Hollywood, what I'm trying to do, and I have nothing because I'm a movie buff, but I'm trying to put the old legends the way they are meant to be read, at least in my opinion, and I think of many other scholars. The werewolf, as I said on this program many times, in Hollywood, you know, if you just get a scratch or you get a little nip, if you're attacked by a werewolf, you turn into a werewolf. It seems almost instantly or the next morning. And I've said then, if you're attacked by a real werewolf, as the legends and traditions go, there's not enough of you left to be returned as a werewolf or as anything, because you're just dead meat. The same way with the real vampire. The real vampire then, someone who is possessed by this ancient parasitic shape-shifting entity that feeds upon our life force, our souls, if you will, these people are left as empty shells. They're left as empty shells. It's nothing romantic. And as I said, you know, in Hollywood, come on, how many of us, you know, would just that little kiss on the neck, and we look like we're 33 in the top shape of our lives, and that lasts forever? I mean, that's a little tempting, but that isn't the way it is. Because with they don't promise immortality when they bite and begin to suck the blood. Their bite means only a painful death. No immortality, nothing, a death. So that's what I try to do, is present the real. Go ahead and have fun with the make-believe. But there's always the real that, you know, you should be warned about. You should be aware that these entities do exist. These parasitic entities are out there.
Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Gardnerville, Nevada. First of all, Lee on the wildcard line. Hi, Lee, you're on with us.
Hello, George.
Hey.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Always good talking with you. Can I speak to Brad Steiger?
You've got him.
You've got me.
Wonderful, Brad. This is Lee Aho, and years ago you came to Seattle, and Wayne and I came to see you in.
Oh my goodness, my gosh, yeah.
And you had a wonderful meditation for us all.
Oh, God
and
bless.
My mother had passed on a short time before. And in this meditation, we climbed these rainbow steps, if you remember.
Yes.
And
yes.
I met her at the top of the steps.
Oh, thanks for calling.
A dear mother of mine, and she took me to her home on the other dimension. So I'm so glad you were on, so I could thank you for that beautiful experience.
Oh, Lee, thanks for calling.
And You're welcome.
That's it. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Great to talk to you.
God bless.
All right. Great. We'll go to New Orleans, Louisiana. George, go ahead. You're up with us.
Good evening, George and Brad.
Hi.
Good evening.
Interesting discussion. I'm going to try to get to the point here.
Okay.
In taking these pictures, I've been taking digital pictures of orbs and for a while now, and I've been trying to get to the bottom of it. And in the process, I noticed that in the night sky, in not on the orb directly, but in between orbs, like in the dark of night, if I zoom all the way in on my digital, I've been getting just a myriad of faces, all kinds of faces, just, you know, really kind of freakish faces.
Very. Where is this in Louisiana?
Well, I get them everywhere.
I don't want your street address, but I mean, where in, are you in New Orleans? Or?
Yeah, New Orleans.
Okay.
But this here happens everywhere. I've been to Nevada, California, Utah, you name it. I've been to Washington State. I've been to the Gildan Ranch. I've been everywhere taking these photos, and I noticed that when I zoom in on the night sky, just the darkness of sky, I don't even have to have orbs. And doesn't even have to be a dark sky necessarily. But when you zoom all the way in, you get these pictures, these faces, just all kinds of faces. And it's really disturbing. At the Gillian Ranch, I took a picture of the Shroud of Turin image of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to make a face like the shroud, and I was taking pictures of myself just to kind of entertain myself because I couldn't believe the look on the face.
I've never heard of someone entertaining themselves that way. But then,
yeah, well, you know, I figured, you know, I was pretty safe trying to imitate Jesus. But
of course.
But I was sitting in the room, and I was holding my camera up trying to take the pictures of the room, and I blew up one of the pictures where the shroud was, the picture of the shroud was on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And when I blew it up, I noticed Jesus was sticking his tongue out at me.
Oh, no.
With faces on his forehead and on his nose.
Mm.
And, you know, these kind of things happen when I'm taking these digital photographs.
Well, that would be kind of unsettling, wouldn't it? I'm sure it must become, does this happen every time?
Just, yeah. Pretty much every time I take the night shots, for sure.
You must have strong mediumistic ability to be bringing in these spirit forms.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. I don't feel like I have any kind of psychic ability or anything.
Well, you must have some unconscious level of activity going on there mediumistically that attracts these entities. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not, you know, and don't worry about it, especially if they stay on film.
Yeah, I'm really not worried about it, oddly
Good.
Enough. I feel pretty safe and secure. I mean, I am trying to, you know, do the right thing and keep my nose clean. And
always do the right thing.
All right, George, good for you. Tampa, Florida. You always got to do the right thing.
Always got to do the right thing.
That's the only way to do it. Let's go to Lauren, Tampa Bay, Florida. First-time caller. Hi, Lauren. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
Brad, you are really just tensing my sensibilities this evening.
I'm really what?
Tensing my sensibilities this evening.
Oh, okay.
Tensing. How's he tensing?
Well, I just have one question. He said that nobody has said anything about Nobody has said anything against what he said in his book?
Well, not so far.
Not so far, no. And you've talked to many people.
What's the point?
What's
here?
The question? Like?
Yeah.
I just don't believe that that's true.
Okay. Well,
all I know is I've known Brad for a number of years, and he's all above board with me.
Well, anytime
the book, by the way, the book just came out, so not a lot of people have it.
Yeah. Book is just out. September 1st.
I suggest, Lauren, you go buy it, you read it, and you be the first person to critique it.
There you go.
Yeah,
Then you would know if there's anything that you disagree with, because how would you know if you haven't read it?
Trenton, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. David, you're up with us.
Yes, hi. This is a mess. I have a question for Brad.
Yep, you got
I'm
him.
Here.
Yes, I'm possessed. I went through a form of possession called obsession, and this entity is still affecting me.
How so?
Well, it gives me commands. It gives me commands, and then I went through an exorcism, and it sort of worked.
Sort of, though.
Huh?
Just sort of, huh?
It either works or it doesn't.
It didn't work.
It didn't work.
The exorcism didn't work.
What are some of these commands, David?
Well, they try to call it in psychiatry. They call it here. The only way I could explain it in psychiatry was hearing voices.
I mean, but what do they try to command you to do?
Well, they don't. They just give me instructions about. It's an entity.
But David, what do they give you instructions to do?
Well, they don't give me instructions. I mean, they just tell me about people. They tell me about people, and sometimes the.
Okay, here's my take. I don't think you're possessed at all. I think you might have a little bit of schizophrenia. And my honest, sincerest recommendation is you seek some medical help on that. Brad, what else could I say on that?
Well, either that or he has psychic ability and picking up impressions, but that surely doesn't sound like possession to me.
No, not at all. Not at all. But do that first, David. I think that's always a good, healthy approach.
And many blessings to you.
Medford, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hey, Robert, you're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Hey, George, thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing.
You know, when I was growing up in San Jose, there was a gentleman that lived across the street from me. And, like, we were only 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a little pet cemetery in the backyard. And we all thought it was really kind of bizarre. This was the same time that Dark Shadows was on television. And but this little boy that was the same age as me used to suck the blood out of all the little animals before he buried them in his backyard.
It
was so bizarre. But I don't know whatever happened to that guy, but this is kind of a...
He wasn't called Jeffrey Dahmer, was he?
No. I don't want to say the name of the gentleman.
No. Of course not.
But you know, as a child, being only 5 years old, it was the oddest thing we'd ever seen.
That's not really a healthy thing for children to be.
No, it was not. It was very bizarre. But when you were on tonight, I thought I'd give you a call and tell you that.
Well, I appreciate that, because that is certainly one of the traits for a lot of people is, and I should have mentioned that. So thank you.
Yeah.
Animal, of course, substitutes in many places, you know, the blood sacrifice. And I have a chapter on the blood cults and the blood sacrifices and so forth, and how it can graduate to human sacrifice, which is...
Well, I hope it never did that. So.
I hope it never did. But,
good luck with your studies.
There are a lot of children who begin that way, and I have a couple accounts in the book. That's exactly what he did, and he ended up then doing the same thing to his grandmother. He was contented to suck the blood of the little animals that he was able to catch, and he ended up slicing her throat and drinking his grandmother's blood.
How long do these people stay in this mode, this vampire mode, Brad? Forever?
Sometimes. Yeah. At least some... psychiatrists now are finally picking up that not everyone under their care is quote-unquote insane, but they may be possessed by parasitic entities, and have even undertaken hypnosis where they talk to that entity, who may have an intelligence so far above that of the patient, be able to speak so many languages, which the patient can, in some cases, speak only English. And at least some people are starting to pay attention to maybe the greater reality that surrounds us all.
Let's go to Vancouver. International line. Hi, Candy. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Brad. I have an example of where bad things can work together for good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was praying. I'm quite serious about prayer, and I was interceding for this particular person. Her name's Janet. She's an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been praying for her for quite a while. And this particular day, I had been really seriously praying for her in the morning. And that evening, I live up in the woods, and I never get scared of anything. And that particular evening, my curtains were opened, and I had a feeling that something was watching me, and mm-hmm. I was going to be raped. And I've never had that feeling before. And
well, that's not a good feeling, I would
no,
say.
No, it was horrific. And what I did, I closed my curtains, and I've never done it since, and I've never done it before. But that evening, I closed my curtains, and I ended up, I turned out the lights, and I went to bed. And I heard the back door open, and I heard, when you kind of, in that house, if you came through the back door, if you didn't know where you were going, you'd run into the table, into a kitchen table. And I had, I heard the chair of the table move.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay. And I started praying. And then I literally felt something lay in my bed. The bed was depressed, and I was facing the opposite direction. And I just started praying like crazy. And I was thinking at that time, okay, should I, my son was in the other room, and I thought, should I yell for him to jump out the window and go to the neighbor? Or is this, what is going on? Is this a friend of mine that's just coming in to, to tell me something, and they're just watching me? Or I didn't know what was going on, and I just kept praying and kind of kept my eyes closed. I was facing the opposite direction. And then finally, I saw like an image. I didn't look at it. I didn't turn around, but I saw an image in my mind of what this was, and it was a horrible looking thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I didn't look at it, and I just kept praying. And at that point, I realized something was going on with someone, and I felt like someone was being raped somewhere, and I was just praying for them. So I just started praying and praying and praying for maybe 2 hours, and then everything just disappeared. And I turned around, and there was nothing in the bed. And I thought, okay, that was just bizarre. I didn't understand it. And the next day, I got a call from a friend of mine, and this girl had, this girl Janet, had gone to an AA meeting. Someone had driven her home, and this person came into her home and tried to rape her.
Mm-hmm.
And he had an axe. He had an axe. And she said, I visited her in the hospital. And afterwards, and she said, Candy, there was something. He wanted to kill me, and something was stopping him.
Did she get hit by the axe at all?
No. She said that he was trying to kill her, and he couldn't, and he had repeatedly raped her, but he was trying to kill her, and he couldn't, and he left. And she ended up in the hospital.
And where is the vampire?
He ended up convicted.
Well, I guess this would be a night stalker category.
Is that what you would call it, Brad?
Yeah, and there, I deal with that, and of course, I don't know how familiar you are with our work, but of course, my wife has written the book, The Power of Prayer, and we've been going to appear twice, but we've had to unfortunately postpone on our book, Real Miracles, Divine Interventions. We've been going to be on the program with George discussing that, and maybe that'll happen around Christmas time or whatever, but it's filled with stories.
Yeah,
like
that's
that.
One of the classics. We'll be back with final phone calls in just a moment with Brad Steiger on Coast to Coast AM. And on our next Coast to Coast program, Dronvalo Melchizedek joins us as he talks about how Mayan elders knew about the pending earth changes for 2012. Should be fascinating. We'll be back with final calls with Brad Steiger on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Brad, before we go back to final calls, tell us a little bit about Vlad the Impaler, who I think is the one that Hollywood picked as Dracula, yet they blew it out of proportion, huh?
Yes. Have the chronology of the classic. I mentioned him because you have to, but he was not a vampire.
And not a nice guy either.
Not a nice guy. He did impale his captives on stakes and watched them writhe as he dined, but he was not a vampire. But again, Bram Stoker was flipping through, finding a nice name, and all of a sudden he came up with Dracula, Dracul, and said, that's it. And, of course, it's been immortalized ever since.
It sure has. It sure has. Next up, let's go to final calls now. Trucking around in Michigan. Hello, Matt. Go ahead. What's your story?
Yeah, I heard your guest mention something about these entities are more people who are addicts and alcoholics are more susceptible.
Yes.
I personally am an addict. I've been, you know, I've had problems since I was basically 11, 12 years old, and you know, been on and off, and done good and done bad at the same time, and I've pretty much tried everything there is to try, you know, with the 12-step and rehab and all that stuff. And I was just wondering if I get a little bit more information on that, like if there's anything that I could look into personally that may help me.
Well, you're not asking a specific question about vampires or entities, though, are you? You're asking about drug addiction?
Is he possessed? No, you said that those who are addicted tend to be more open.
Right.
Could that be happening to him?
They open themselves up. I haven't heard him mention that he, you know, feels that he has been beset at all.
Well, let's ask him. Matt, do you think that you've been possessed or taken over?
Well, I have had instances where I've never been, you know, I was brought up, raised Christian, and suicide is not something that, you know, is looked well upon. And I have attempted suicide and have no recollection of anything that happened. And at the same time, I was not on drugs. Mm-hmm. You know, I was actually clean at the time. And there are times when I feel like I just, there's something in me saying, just kill yourself, get it over with. Yeah. And, you know, of course, it may be a part of what I'm going through.
Right.
But it also, it doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't feel like me. And these are at times when I am clean and I am doing good.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I've had, I have so many good friends who are recovering alcoholics who describe, you know, that the situation of blackout and not knowing and wanting. So, you know, I can't really speak with any authority that may be happening to you. My illustration was that when we open ourselves up or lose control, we are more vulnerable or susceptible to these entities. So I can't really say that happened to you. It may be, you know, the hell that you go through as you're trying to, I say stick with your 12-point program and do the best you can, and God bless you. I know it's hell because I have many dear friends who I've gone through this with.
And you know, Matt, in your darkest moment, the next day will be a little brighter than that one because they can't get any worse.
No.
And keep truck driving for us. Let's go to Jason in Deer Park, Washington, west of the Rockies. Hey, Jason, go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much.
Sure.
I had two questions. The first one was wondering if our guest had ever heard of the hag entity or the phenomenon of the hag.
I'm sure he has.
I'm sure he has, yes.
Okay, well, I had told my story a long time ago with my run-in with the hag. And just about a week ago, a woman had called in and told her story, how the hag was trying to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Another lady had called in a little while later and had claimed to be a shamanic spiritual warrior.
Okay.
And that she could, you know, get rid of this entity. Well, I'm wondering, I know that, you know, you were saying that we open ourselves up to these entities.
Yeah. Yes, I
was reading, once I read up on the shamanic spiritual warrior, I found out that it's has a huge relation to the Wiccan practice of witchcraft.
Mm.
So my second question would be, is this today's, or this phenomenon you're talking about with possession, how is that, or is there any relation to this Wiccan practice? Thank you.
Thank you. These kinds of questions, you know, they cannot be answered with all the statements. You know, you can't give one statement that will fit every situation.
We have experts who say the old hag phenomena is a form of sleep paralysis that people go through. Okay. And I think that may account for some. Other instances, it's something much more, and it continues, and scratch marks are left, and bite marks are left, and then it fits into the succubus category. And I have many stories like that in the book, where what he's describing. The spiritual, the shamanic warrior, I guess I would associate more with the Native American, and as an adoptive member of a number of tribes, and both my wife and I very active in Native American activities, I associated more with Native American tribal traditions than the Wiccan, though certainly shaman, which began as a Siberian term and now is used kind of interchangeably for medicine man or medicine person or even Wiccan, I suppose the spiritual warrior, maybe we all like to think of ourselves, if we're trying to do the best we can and think of ourselves as spiritual warriors. I think it's a good attitude to have. It's a good attitude to maintain. And that's one of the things that I deal with in Real Vampires, is to be a spiritual warrior and walk in the light. Keep the light around us. We don't have to be defeated. We don't have to give in to these creatures.
I've never heard of anybody hurt by the old hag syndrome, Brad. I've heard them, had their breath taken away for a bit and stuff like that. But I've never heard them, so hurt that they could have died.
Yeah. And again, that situation is far different than when you wake up with claw marks all over your back and bite marks on you and so forth. That, to say that that is sleep paralysis, I think, is really stretching the boundaries of that psychological definition. But again, these are, and so many of the questions in this field, we just can't give allness answers. We have to, it's the situation. So many things depend on the individual situation, and I think we who research this field should always keep that in mind. I mean, there aren't really any laws to follow. There aren't any definite, we can all have our creeds and we can all have our dictums, but I think they must be very flexible. They must be very flexible, always subject to change. I said before that I think true science should be like the street system in New York, always under repair and always under change and always capable of going in another direction.
Tell me about your chapter, Vampires from UFOs. What's the theory there?
Well, again, comparing how many entities with abduction cases and so forth, and I'm going way back because, every generation describes anew, but I go way back in the UFO field, and first big book on UFOs. I've written 22 books now on UFOs, and I have 17 theories for what they may be, and written a book about probably every one of those 17 theories. But there are many cases, whether they are well known or not, where the entity appears and does assume the very form of the vampire and does attack and take blood. So many of these occur in South America. I also include and had my good friend Nick Redfern write a chapter on the chupacabras.
Nick will be a guest for us in about a week or so.
Yeah. Well, he's busy writing a review of Real Vampires right now. As soon as he bless his heart. At any rate, he wrote a chapter on chupacabras in Puerto Rico. And, of course, we know that this is another type of vampiric, or vampiric, whatever you prefer, creature and entity that goes way, way back. I mean, it wasn't just pop up in Puerto Rico 10, 20 years ago. People in South America surely have, and Europe, Spain, have talked about this chupacabras, whether they call it the goat sucker or whether they call it a vampire. But it's some kind of entity that is, again, it may be some type of animal that becomes possessed and distorted by these same shape-shifting parasitic entities that rob its life force and then seek blood.
Let's go to final callers driving around in California. First-time caller, Albert, you made it in. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Norrie, Mr. Steiger. How are you?
Hi.
Fine, thank you.
Excellent, sir. I would like to briefly describe a very interesting meditative experience that I had and then two events that consequently followed.
Okay.
It was after listening to one of your shows, Mr. Nori, and I was interested about the concept of information in the universe. So basically, I was sitting on my couch, I was watching TV and stuff, and there was like a little styrofoam disc that you find on top of blank CDs. I just decided, why not try to make it move? You know, why not?
I love it.
So I sat down there, and I'm staring at this thing, and I'm trying, my head hurts, and then all of a sudden I realize, you know, somehow the concept of the Buddha came to me, where he just sat there, and he decided to let go of his will, and just sit there and exist. And so I decided to not desire to move it anymore, and I literally sat down, and I just wanted to get information. So I told myself that I'm not going to try anything. I just want every particle in the room or whatever it is to give me information and the exact physical location of that styrofoam disc. And an interesting thing happened. Somehow this concept of, you know, the brain takes a couple milliseconds before you process information. So right. What I wanted to do was I wanted to bridge the gap. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see if I could live closer to reality. The weirdest thing happened. The almost tendril-like things started shooting out of it, almost like, you know the Gauss tubes, like the plasma balls you see at Spencer's and put your hand on it, and those wisps start shooting out. Well, that's what I started seeing all over the place. And then the edges of the styrofoam disc, and then pretty soon most everything around the room seemed to be in a constant state of, like it was moving. I thought about Heisenberg, you know, the uncertainty principle,
yeah.
Because you can't really tell where anything is. And it got to a point where it was uncomfortable. I felt like I was aware of everything, the exact location, how fast we were moving through space. It was the weirdest thing.
Right,
I would have
right.
completely wrote it off if I hadn't looked up at the TV and I noticed the interference lines. You know, the TV is projected at 24 frames a second, and I could actually physically see the black lines on the TV
mm-hmm.
slowing down. So, you know, I was really stoked. I started, you know, I told some of my friends and this and that. Well, lo and behold, on September 14th of last year, I see a UFO in broad daylight in Stockton for about 7 minutes. And this thing looked like, you know, at first I think it's this black spinning Mylar balloon, you know, purplish black spinning Mylar balloon.
How big was yeah. it?
Well, see, sir, here's the thing. As far as frame of reference, I've never seen anything like it before, so I can't tell you.
Ah, mm-hmm.
There are these two giant containment domes kind of thing, like right off Stockton. And it's just two half domes that are about 200 feet high. And if I were to estimate it from that, I would say it was about 2,000 feet up. You know, but it was the size, I would say it's the size of, you know, if you took a dime and you cut its diameter down by half, you know, just like about a centimeter across in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this thing, it's spinning, and it's a spinning purple thing. And at first, I look up at it, but it's really interesting, but I think, you know, it's a really weird-looking balloon. Well, it's moving towards me. And the only thing that I can describe about it is that it's iridescent almost. It looks like it's shimmering, like it's a mirage almost. You know, I'm in the nuclear field, I was before, and the only thing that I can describe it as being the color wise was the color of hafnium, you know,
mm-hmm.
this purplish black
right.
thing, right?
Right. right?
And here I am, you know, my entire life I've been a skeptic pretty much, and this thing is moving. And the closer it's getting to me, you know, in my general direction, the more indistinct its edge becomes, you know, craziest thing ever. At this point, I'm thinking that's strange. You know, the closer it gets, the harder it is.
Harder is just to see it.
Yeah, it's a spheroid, right? And I think to myself, if this thing stops, it's got to be a UFO. As if this object read my thoughts,
mm-hmm.
it stopped
mm-hmm.
directly in front of me, and it's spinning. And I am screaming like a man on fire for anybody to look. And, you know, there's like a cop that's halfway down the block. You know, I'm in an industrial area with my buddies operating the plant. And, you know, he even sees me looking up. Nobody sees it. Well, here's where it gets weird.
Nobody sees it?
He sees the freaking thing, you know, and my cell phone is dead. Of all the times that my cell phone could be dead, this is the time.
It drained
it. Well, exactly, sir, exactly. Well, here's the weird thing. The power plant fluctuating. The meters were going crazy at the time. That's what my buddy was telling me. Anyway, the thing's spinning, and I wave to it because I'm like, oh, God, I might get abducted. I don't want them to probe me in areas I don't want to be probed.
Oh, go for it.
This thing. I wave at this thing, at least, you know, like I'm on friendly terms. Instant I wave to it, it starts going up. And here's where it gets a little crazy. It goes up. As it goes up, this purplish thing that I can only describe as a shell or some sort of energy field kind of melts away. And it was so subtle, I didn't even notice it. What was left was this, you know, it went straight up in the sky. It didn't have any sideways direction. It goes up. It appears to be kind of like a tetrahedron of a sort, but with rounded edges, like a pyramid, except the edges were rounded, and it had the color of just like cut sodium, like a burnished, you know, silvery white, titanium white. It was shiny and dull. I don't know how to describe it. It's spinning like a bullet.
All right, let me get your reaction, Brad, because we've only got a minute. And then
it sounds like, first of all, he created in this interesting experiment his own illumination experience.
He conjured this up.
His epiphany, if you will, and he opened a portal to the universe. He was given a key. He was given an invitation. And in a sense, he did exactly what the alchemists of old did. He conjured it up.
And indeed he did. Real Vampires out there on the bookstore's shelves now?
Out the bookstores and all the electronic bookstores as well.
Very good. Thank you, Brad, again. Say hi to Sherry for me.
Thank all of you. I really appreciate the invitation to come on and talk about the book.
Brad Steiger, Real Vampires. Hate to run into one of those things. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. As I mentioned on our next Coast to Coast program, Dronvalo Melchizedek will join us. I've gotten hundreds of emails over the last couple of years from some of you who want Dronvalo on the show. So we've got him on our next Coast to Coast program. So stand by for that one. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.